Cape Talk.
Call 021 446 0567.
Because we all are feeling a bit depressed and glum by load shedding and petrol prices and things, we thought we'd chat to somebody this morning who's known for making people laugh. Our profile guest is one of the country's most popular comedians and actors, thank you very much, and joins us ahead of his appearance at the Jive Cape Town Funny Festival at the Baxter Theatre tonight. Alan Committee is a multi-award-winning comedian, a naledi, a fleur-de-cup and a salmon to his name, thank you very much. Before we welcome him to Weekend Breakfast, let's take a listen to a clip from his show Apocalaughs at Theatre on the Bay last year.
Secret, we didn't say it to anyone, but in our hearts, we were happy not to see friends and family. Yeah, I'm sorry, I can't be there for the 50th. It's locked down. Sorry, man. And we were so happy, it was just us and our immediate families, and we made a lot of food, mostly with banana.
Apocalaughs, which was on at Theatre of the Bay last year. He's one of the hardest working folks in comedy. Alan Committee, how the devil are you, sir?
Well, now, look at you asking. I'm delighted to be able to test you. I've missed your little voice. It's lovely to have tuned in on a Saturday morning. And amidst all the madness, the corruption, the wars in Europe, the going backwards in 200 years in America, to find out that the world is even worse because a lemon has blown off your tree.
I know.
Fallen to the ground.
No.
What kind of world are we living in? Are we bringing our children into? This is what I ask.
Dark days. Dark days. Dark times in middle-class Cape Town. It is it is tough. I don't know how we're going to cope. Listen, you delightful creature. It's been so long since we spoke. And when my producer, Vicky, said, do you want to speak to Alan Committee? And I went, yes, actually. I do want to speak to him. Because, I mean, we haven't spoken for so long. I don't think since the pandemic madness, which you just worked throughout constantly at work. But how are you?
Well, look now, first of all, was it deliberate? Were you avoiding me? Anyway, that's something for another discussion.
And off air.
I hear you. It's been, as for everyone, a kind of mad and slightly disorientating time the last 2.5 years. But maybe some kind of bright lights somewhere. I mean, in this country, any bright light would be most welcome. certainly for the theatre audiences, this last week has been quite thrilling with the joy that's been bubbling amidst our Jive Funny Festival audiences and amongst the cast, you know. Suddenly people sitting in much fuller numbers, obviously, without masks, and the energy and the connection has been really quite fantastic and inspiring.
I did an event last week at the Labia, and it was packed. It was a packed house, and it was so lovely. And just seeing the joy on the faces of the Labia staff also, that it was so wonderful. Listen, you spoke about sort of lights and brightness and stuff. Is it right that you are one of these clever folks who's got themselves an inverter?
I do. Which is how I can chat to you this morning, because we are currently being load shed.
Are you being load shed?
Yes, as it were, from the Latin shadeo, shadere, shadui, like anyone cares. I think I saw this maybe getting worse a while ago, so I thought it might be worth a little money spent, and I'm grateful that I did. But, you know, we're fortunate most of the theatres in Cape Town now, as I understand, have got themselves generators, but it doesn't help. It's a tough old time. But it's an interesting time, because as bad as that is on the outside and for people to leave their homes and what have you, and to go out and enjoy a night's entertainment, it is a good thing to do. And we've seen people just releasing into laughter, releasing into entertainment. There's a couple of superb shows on. There's incredible ballet on. There's stuff like Theatre on the Bay and Cork Bay Theatre and Gate 69. And it feels like a real resurgence, because these performers who haven't had a chance for 2.5 years have a lot to say and a lot to share. And if people are willing to go out and embrace some of the darkness, I think they're going to find some beautiful, inspired light in these venues.
I agree. I do it, folks. If you can get out there, do it. It's just a return. And also particularly comedy. And I hear what you're saying. It is. It's lovely to go to the ballet, and it's lovely to see a dramatic performance. But to be able to just have a laugh, to be able to sit and hear other people laugh, is such a treat. I want to take you back to your introduction into laughter, as it were, or your introduction into the land of laughter. Because like an awful lot of comedians, this wasn't your first sort of your first thing, was it? You you were trained to be a teacher, much like the lovely Dalen Oliver, Riyad Musa, of course, doctor. You all had these other things, and they're all proper jobs. I mean, proper jobs. So
my, if you will, I like to use this phrase now because we've had so many Marvel movies. My origin story is an interesting one in that I knew pretty much by what was then standard four, standard five, grade, what's that now, grade seven, that what I wanted to do. And I remember sitting my parents down, my dad was in the Navy, my mom was a housewife, and saying to them, I'd love to be an actor. I love performing, and my dad, bless him, probably gave a better performance than I've ever given by not losing his mind and just looked at me and he said, okay, that's good. He said, what would you do to back it up? Because it seems to me it's quite an insecure and tenuous job to take on. And I said, well, and I kind of thought for a minute or two and said, well, maybe I could be a teacher. And he said, okay. And that was it. It was kind of decided before I even went into high school. And so I always had the idea of, I loved my teaching. I taught for a period of about 8 years on and off between two or three schools. But it was always part-time, and it was always towards the end of going into the performing arts. And then obviously trained as an actor at UCT. And so my first love was to be a stage actor, or maybe to go into television or film. But it was always with comedy as its kind of central fulcrum, because that's what I love, to make people laugh. By the time I got into my first one or two one-man shows, it also became clear that I could interact and play with an audience in a very particular way. And so slowly, stand-up became the focus of my career, and then the acting became the thing that I return to once or twice a year if I can, to stretch other muscles. But it was interesting because for me, it was decided very early on, and I was able to follow that path as much as I could.
It's such a beautiful thing to know that that's what you want to do, and to then be able to look back and say, I did that. And I suppose there's an awful lot of young people out there who would say, oh, but I want to get into that industry. And to have a parent say, what are you going to fall back on, or what are you going to have as a backup? Depending on the type of person you are, you might take that the wrong way as to say, well, don't you believe in me? Or it's actually a very, very shrewd suggestion, and also quite a supportive one as well, of, I acknowledge what you want to do, but I also acknowledge it might be hard, so to have something to fall back on. Do you ever come across former pupils who go, oh, my God, you're that stand-in who, you know, and then
all the time.
Do you?
All the time. And in fact, if anything, I mean, I look back on it now, and it was never intentional, but it might have been the best thing I ever did was that teaching. I did 4 years at Westerford and about four of the years at Herschel. And those audiences were the core of my first audience.
I bet,
If not the students themselves or the learners, their parents who came to support. And then now, of course, as I get older, I'm now seeing some of my students with their kids who come along to my show. I mean, this is outrageous. I can't believe time passes like this. And, you know, they make a point of telling me, which, you know, is an unpleasant conversation.
Rude.
But it is incredible. And to this day, in fact, earlier this week, I had two people who met me in the foyer afterwards and said, oh, do you remember us from? And it's always an amazing thing. And I'm delighted by it, and I'm humbled by it, because that many years ago, and for people to, you know, take the effort or make the effort to follow you or to come and support you is always a lovely thing.
Alan, I'm always fascinated when I speak to comedians. I'm always fascinated to know what your gauge is in terms of, how do you know what's going to hit? How do you know how do you know what's funny? Because what I find funny may well not be what you find funny. I mean, it is actually.
Absolutely.
Because you obviously know me to be hilarious. But how do you know it? And what's your process? Do people still do? I remember seeing a thing where I can't remember if it was Ricky Gervais or somebody of that ilk would go and do like a really small gig to sort of test it out, and then go to Wembley and make us pay through the nose for him.
In fact, he's busy now with Supernature, which is his new big show. He's doing testing gigs or warm-up gigs down the UK. My process is slightly different, but where it's similar, I guess, is, and I guess most comics would say this, is the way you learn is you create a kind of comic sensibility timeline or area for yourself. The most important thing is it's got to be funny to you. You can only speak for yourself and for like-minded people.
Yeah.
There is absolutely no point in trying to make everyone laugh at the same thing. That's a fool's errand. That's just not possible. But you're hopefully going to say something that will tickle the funny bones of some people, and then maybe if you find the exact right wording and or perspective, it's going to get to a bigger group. And then if you're a good comic and you're able to adapt, then you might increase that reach, as it were. But even, I mean, I also know brilliant, brilliant comics who are particularly niche, and there are only certain kinds of folk who will find them funny, and that doesn't make them less of a comedian. It just makes them particularly niche, and that's fine too. For my process, I think having done this, I mean, this is Live and Let Laugh, which is my new show at the end of the year, Theatre on the Bay, is my 25th solo comedy show.
Sure.
And so after 25 years, you're now at a point when I work with Chris Weir, who's a theatre director and works with me on many of my shows. It's got to the point now where I have a very strong feeling of what should work and what probably will work, of course, with refinement in front of a crowd and post shows. But you're 80% sure that that's the kind of thing your audience has loved. And then on top of that, you're trying to push the envelope every show. You're trying to go, well, how can this stretch me as a performer, but also my audience? Because my worldview changes as I get older, and I suspect the zeitgeist of the world is constantly moving. Where are we in the world? So jokes that I made 10 years ago, I mean, this is constantly, we're interrogating this. With the stuff that I might have said 10 years ago is either no longer politically correct or resonates with an audience. So I have to be constantly examining that and upgrading that. And then in terms of the warm-ups, I do work differently because I'm a theatre baby. I tend to write and prepare the show completely, and the first night of my new run is the first time I will put out 90 to 100 minutes of new material. And so I always say to audience members, if you come to my first couple of shows and then my last couple of shows 8 weeks later, you're going to see fairly different shows, but they're both equally interesting to watch, because the first couple of shows will be buoyed by adrenaline and excitement for sharing new material. But it might be a bit rough, and it might bring up some interesting things. And then the last shows will be a well-honed and carefully crafted stand-up show, but might have lost some of its vibrancy and improvisatory nature, if you will.
Alan, tell me something. What do you think is the key to longevity in the comedy industry? And the reason that I ask that is because I, as somebody who loves comedy, I've also noticed that there are trends in comedy.
Yeah.
There was the sort of, and again, I say that Ricky Gervais and the Louis C.K., very hard, very blunt, quite raw, that makes you go, I can't believe he just said that. And that sort of came into a thing. I think Jimmy Carr maybe kind of came off the back of that sort of thing too. But that's not necessarily always going to be the case. And as you say, things change. The things that perhaps people laughed at 20 years ago or even 10 years ago, we might know a bit better these days, and we might laugh at those. I'm thinking of, a Bernard Manning, for example, in the UK, who used to tell terribly offensive stuff that people thought was marvellous in the 70s, and then was sort of, absolutely ostracised from entertainment in the mid-90s. So what is the secret? How do you find that balance? And I suppose also the integrity of who you are.
Correct. So those are all interlaced. And I mean, it's like anything. I think any artist, and dare I say, a comedian is an artist in their own right, is that you've got to be super sensitive to what's going on, inside you and your relationship to the world and the people in it, and B, to what is happening out there. And so whenever you're creating anything, that doesn't mean you have to agree with it. You don't have to toe the party line. You might choose to go against the grain and reflect a different opinion. But I think you have to have a strong perspective. You have to have strong opinions about things. And it needs to be interrogated and carefully thought out. That's not to make comedy sound too heavy, because ultimately the job is to make people laugh. But I think the task of a comedian is to make the work look easy on stage. It must look as if we're making it up in the moment,
yeah,
and just saying something silly and ribald and whatever. But actually, when you watch comedians over a period of time, you start realizing the kind of thought and work that goes into some of the things that they say. And so, yeah, you're constantly refining and changing. And I, for example, I'm about to do a 4 nights at Cork Bay Theatre next
week. Yes, 80% sold out, folks. So you need to get... but it is, though, isn't it? So you need to get... Where do people get tickets?
They can buy through Quicket.
Through Quicket. Quickly, yeah, folks. So, it's 80% sold out. Get online now.
That's a show that I did 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, I remember.
Which is a follow-up to Defending the Caveman. Now, just revisiting that, as I have been over the last couple of days, it's interesting how things have shifted and how I have to kind of relook at it and maybe slightly realign my perspective or the wording or whatever it might be. But equally, I can play with the fact that things have changed and reflect comically on what those changes might be now. So it's a fun process. It can be a grueling process. And, of course, ultimately, the test is in front of an audience because... whether they respond and how they respond will tell you exactly where you stand. And we were having this conversation backstage a couple of nights ago at Funny Fest in terms of we think really good comics, whether they're young and new to the industry or have been around for many years, are the ones who are able to self-regulate, who are able to come off stage and say, wow, that worked or that wasn't as good as 2 nights ago. If you can understand why you were better or worse, then you're going to be fine. It's the guys who come up and go, that was incredible. And we're all standing there going, oh, okay.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, sure.
Sure. Those are the guys that you ultimately think, well, how do they get better?
Yeah.
And maybe that's true of almost any profession, certainly any artist. The ability to self-regulate
and to put eyes on yourself. Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. Alan, just tell us quickly so we can get tickets from Quicket for Love Factually. Yeah, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah, correct.
For Love Factually, 6th to the 9th of July, Cork Bay. Folks, please don't miss out on this. It's 80% sold out already. So if you want to catch Alan, please make sure that you get online now and get your tickets. Anything else we can book for in advance if we can't make it to Love Factually?
Well, we are opening bookings within the next month for Live and Let Laugh, which will be at the end of the year. And then I'm happy to... Well, I can't announce what it is, but within 3 weeks, we are telling people about a great new play.
What?
I'm going to do some proper, serious, meaty
stuff. You're going back to the proper acting, darling.
You've got to get back
to the proper acting, darling. You must. You simply must.
Comedy becomes even more fun.
Can you not tell us anything?
I can tell you that Sylvain Strike, one of South Africa's great... directors, is going to be directing the production, and I'll be sharing the stage with a dear friend and tremendous actress, Robin Scott.
Oh.
And it's a meaty American play, and the audience will delight in it, and it's going to be a Theatre in the Bay and at Monte Cassino, and that's what I can tell you, and stop forcing me to tell you more. I won't do it.
I love talking to you. You're an absolute dream. For everyone who is heading off to the Baxter tonight to watch Alan, have the most fun. Get your tickets for Love Factually at Cork Bay Theatre. Yeah. Okay. And then he's doing a play that he can't tell us anything more about because he's an absolute scoundrel. But make sure that you follow him on social media platforms to find out when it's happening. Goodbye, you fabulous creature.
Big hugs to you, amazing woman.